From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So by now you've heard of the StoryCorps project, the stories themselves, and the way they happen. The StoryCorps has volunteers who travel the country helping collect stories. They have mobile booths. The stories are recorded on a CD and preserved at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. So far, they've collected and archived more than 30,000 of these stories for more than 60,000 people. The way it works is two people, usually two, sit down and share a 40-minute conversation. But you don't need a booth, and you don't even need StoryCorps to collect the stories of those close to you. Today in the program, we're talking about oral histories, about the importance of getting these stories, how you go about it, what questions you ask. A primer on stories after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The person behind the StoryCorps project, the radio producer David Isay, has said the seed of his affection for and his obsession about story collecting came from an experience where he lost some stories. He was 11 years old. One day after a large holiday meal, he gathered his grandparents and one particularly engaging aunt together to ask them questions about their lives. He had some cassette equipment, and their answers remained on a cassette. At some point in his life, the cassette disappeared, couldn't find it. The experience brought home the importance of collecting these stories and saving them. Today in the program, we're talking about collecting stories, about saving them, about oral histories, the importance of getting these stories, how you go about it, what you want, the questions you ask. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have questions about all of this, 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Independent radio producer David Isay, of course, the founder of StoryCorps and its parent company, Sound Portraits Productions. StoryCorps is heard here on KUER on Fridays during Morning Edition and, of course, across the country. He's written two books based on StoryCorps interviews, Listening is an Act of Love, and most recently, Mom, a Celebration of Mothers from StoryCorps. David is joining us today from his office in Brooklyn. And David, I say welcome back. Thanks very much for being with us.
Doug, I'm always happy to be here. It's one of my favorite public radio shows anywhere in the country.
Thanks very much. Peggy Bulger is also with us, a folklorist, director of the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. We should say the center archives all of the StoryCorps interviews and houses them and many other collections as well. And Peggy Bulger is joining us from NPR in Washington. And Peggy Bulger, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Doug. Glad to be here.
Okay, so David, I started with that story you've told. I've had you tell it here, in fact, about when you were 11 and you sort of misplaced those that cassette of your grandparents and your aunt. But yeah, what I'm
trying to figure out which aunt I had so many crazy aunts. I'm not sure which one I singled out.
Right.
Probably the one who insisted that she had invented fruit salad.
Well, I guess the thing I was interested in about that story is, do you remember anything about the interview? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you remember anything about the questions you were asking?
You know, I imagine that it wasn't a terribly good interview.
Right.
I don't remember anything about it. Therein lies the problem. As you said, that was, I still to this day, you know, kind of kick myself. And StoryCorps has been around for 8 years now. And we've recorded about 40,000 stories with about 80,000 people because people come in pairs. And I travel around a lot and talk about StoryCorps.
Yeah.
And I always hear from people who say, I wish I had recorded this relative or that relative. And now it's too late.
I wanted to ask, David, you first on this question, Peggy, but I want to get you on this as well. Why is this important? I mean, that's such a basic question, but why is it so important? I mean, we remember these people. We remember the way they were. It's encased in our memory. So why is it important that we record them, that we collect them?
Well, I'm going to give a perspective that I know is going to be. I'm going to kind of take one end that I know is different than where Peggy's going to go, and I would say say that one thing that's really important about doing these sorts of interviews is really has to do with being in the present. And that has to do with stopping and, you know, taking the time to speak to a loved one, to ask some questions. And that act of doing these interviews, and this is really the premise that StoryCorps is built on, stopping and turning off your, you know, BlackBerry and computer and looking someone in the eye, asking these questions tells them how much they matter to you. And tells people that you love them. And that's really, you know, I think of StoryCorps is it has many purposes, but it's a very much in the present project. So that, you know, we just came through 9/11, and you know, StoryCorps did a lot of work around, you know, the losses of 9/11, which reminds us again how you never know what tomorrow's going to bring.
Yeah.
And it's a very much kind of live life with no regrets kind of project, and you want to say the things to the people who matter to you today.
Peggy, why do you say this matters?
Well, actually, I want to just build on what Dave has said about being in the present, which is absolutely, absolutely true. The sound of someone's voice is so much more powerful than reading a manuscript about history and about what happened, but talking to someone about their reactions to historical events are so important. But I guess with the American Folklife Center at the library, we're looking to the future, and that is that these stories will be very important for future generations to understand what was going on at the turn of the 21st century. So in our archive, for instance, we have recordings that were done on the day after Pearl Harbor on December the 8th, 1941. Alan Lomax was the head of the archive and asked 12 people to go out with state-of-the-art equipment at the time and do man-on-the-street interviews. Well, the people at the library, the librarian, thought he was crazy. You know, why would we want this in the National Library? Well, needless to say, those recordings now are invaluable about what people really felt and how they reacted to the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
And I have to say that listening to those recordings at Peggy's archive, and I want to talk a little bit more about Peggy later, but those recordings, and I know that those Pearl Harbor recordings very well. Some of them took place inside a pool parlor in a pool hall in Washington.
Yeah.
Those were direct influences to creating StoryCorps. Again, for a slightly different reason than what I was speaking about before, but the clarity of these voices brought me back, of these everyday people, brought me back to that time and that place in ways that I had never experienced before. And I have to say that Peggy, who is leaving the Folklife Archive soon, was really so instrumental in creating StoryCorps, because when I had this crazy idea 9 years ago, we opened 8 years ago, we had never spoken before, and I picked up the phone and said, you know, I want to create this archive of the American voice. Will you accept these at the American Folklife Center? And without pausing, she said yes, and that was the beginning of StoryCorps.
You know, you've talked about, David, the listening to, I mean, imagine how incredibly fortunate we are to have had Alan Lomax's just inclination to go out and do that, which, as Peggy said, was kind of an odd thing to do, go and collect people talking. I mean, you talk about how, because you've listened to a lot of those tapes, as you say, and you talk about how the voice transported you, is how you put it, in a way a photograph or a film really couldn't have. And I guess that's the essence of radio, that uh-huh. connection with the voice.
Uh-huh. No, we've talked about this before, you know, that to me the soul is kind of contained in the voice, and it's the intimacy of, you know, it's what radio is all about. It's when you're driving in a car and the radio's on, it's like whoever's, you know, Doug, you are, you know, whispering in the ear of whoever it is that's driving or in the passenger seat, and it's just it's a medium unlike any other.
I want to move in to some kind of basics. I think it's important to talk about the basics of how people go about this, whether they're in a StoryCorps booth or in, you know, in a hospital room or a, you know, a living room, I mean, wherever it might be. But one of the important questions, I guess, is, do you think, David, I say that you know the story you want or the stories that you want when you go in, or should you go in not having any expectations, or is it a little bit of both? I mean, what is it you should think that you want when you go into all of this?
Well, I mean, I can speak to the StoryCorps method, which is nothing about StoryCorps is terribly complicated. It's pretty it's not rocket science. It's about sitting with we suggest a 40-minute interview, and if you go on our website, if you go to StoryCorps.org, and maybe we can figure out how to get some of this information on the KUER website as well. We have kind of do-it-yourself information about how to do these interviews. You know, my suggestion is I do think people should prepare before they go in to do an interview like this. On our website, we have something called a question generator that has, you know, the top 10 StoryCorps questions and then, you know, hundreds of others depending on what you want to talk about. But basically what the StoryCorps facilitators would tell you before going into an interview is, you know, ask those questions you've always wanted to ask. And I think a lot of people think of a StoryCorps interview, this 40-minute interview, as if I had 40 minutes left to speak to this person, what would I want to know? And that's a pretty good way to start. So I think that StoryCorps is very much about listening. So you may go in with an idea of what you want to talk about, but you want to, you know, you want to listen carefully to whatever's being said and let that conversation guide you and guide the questions.
Mm. Throughout the hour, I want to play some stories from StoryCorps because it raises a lot of questions about how you go about this, the surprises that you get, you know. It seems like in some ways there aren't many rules. The idea is just getting, as you said, the interaction in a story. I want to play Carl McNair. A story from Carl McNair. And David, I say set this up for us, if you would.
Sure. This is an example of what the kind of breadth of the interviews now after 8 years that we have in the archive. My production team knew that the 25th anniversary of the Challenger explosion was approaching earlier this year and searched our archive. And it turned out that a man named Carl McNair had come to our booth in Atlanta to remember his brother Ron, who was one of the seven astronauts to die when the Challenger exploded in 1986. And he had come to StoryCorps to talk about growing up with Ron in Lake City, South Carolina. And this is an excerpt of their conversation.
When he was 9 years old, Ron, without my parents or myself knowing his whereabouts, he decided to take a mile walk from our home down to the library, which was, of course, public library, but not so public for black folks.
Okay.
When you're talking about 1959. So as he was walking in there, all these folks were staring at him because they were white folk only, and they were looking at him and said, well, you know, who's this Negro? So he politely positioned himself in line to check out his books. Well, this old librarian, she says, this library is not for coloreds. He said, well, I would like to check out these books. She says, young man, if you don't leave this library right now, I'm going to call the police. So he just propped himself up on the counter and sat there and said, I'll wait. So she called the police and subsequently called my mother. Police came down, two burly guys come in and say, well, where's the disturbance? And she pointed to the little 9-year-old boy sitting up on the counter. He says, man, what's the problem? So my mother, in the meanwhile, she was called. She comes down there praying the whole way there. Lord Jesus, please don't let them put my child in jail. And my mother asked the librarian, what's the problem? Well, he wanted to check out the books. And you know your son shouldn't be down here. And the police officer said, you know, why don't you just give the kid the books? And my mother said, he'll take good care of them. And reluctantly, the librarian gave Ron the books. And my mother said, what did you say? He said, thank you, ma'am. Later on, as youngsters, a show came on TV called Star Trek. Now, Star Trek showed the future where there were black folk and white folk working together.
Right.
And I looked at it as science fiction, because that wasn't going to happen, really. But Ronald saw it as science possibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came up during a time when there was Neil Armstrong and all of those guys. So how was a colored boy from South Carolina wearing glasses, never flew a plane, how was he going to become an astronaut? But Ron was the one who didn't accept societal norms as being his norm. I mean, that was for other people. And he got to be aboard his own Starship Enterprise.
That's a story Carl McNair recorded in a StoryCorps Booth. And David, I say, you know, one thing that comes out of that story is how the interaction, which makes it so much more, makes you so much more present in the story. They're laughing together, and he seems absolutely relaxed, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, I do want to say as a cap off to that story, that that library in Lake City, South Carolina, was named for Ronald McNair the same day that we broadcast the story. So life comes full circle in that way. Yeah, I mean, I think that that is one of the powers, you know, part of the, I think the power of the StoryCorps method has to do with the fact that it's two people who know each other having a conversation. The power of this is that StoryCorps is very much a project that, I think if one word comes to mind, it's generosity. You know, it's about two people being generous with each other, having this conversation. You know, nobody's looking for 15 minutes of fame. You know, no one's looking for money or a reality TV show. It's just listening. I think that there's something about the purity of the act of doing these interviews that helps to create the power of what happens in the booth.
David Isay is with us. He's founder of StoryCorps, author of Listening is an Act of Love, and the book Mom, Celebration of Mothers from StoryCorps. Peggy Bulger is also with us, director of the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. We should say a group of trained StoryCorps facilitators is in Utah this week. They're conducting interviews at the 12th annual Utah Senior Expo. The expo runs from 8 until 7 o'clock today and tomorrow. 8 to 7 today, tomorrow from 8 to 3 at the Southtown Expo Center in Sandy. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are joined by StoryCorps' David Isay. Peggy Bulger is also with us, a folklorist, director of the American Folklife Center. We're talking about StoryCorps in particular, but also more generally the art, the technique of collecting your own stories from those close to you. David Isay, I want to jump into a story. This is Joshua Littman. Because I think it's a story, it's an interaction that he's having. It's a kid who has Asperger's syndrome. And there's this interaction in this story between Joshua and his mother. And I have to say, he comes up with some of the most brilliant questions. I was thinking about how you come up with these questions, but I wanted to play this. Anything else we need to say about this particular story?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because Josh is... Most people use, as I was talking before, our question generator, which has all the, you know, great StoryCorps questions. They also write their own. Josh is one of the few participants who completely came up with his own questions. You know, most of these have only been asked once in the booth, and that's by Josh. I'm not sure if you're going to pick up the interview from the beginning, but he has Asperger's syndrome, which, as you know, is a form of autism where people are extremely, kids are extremely, and adults are extremely smart and high functioning, but often come across as eccentric and have a hard time with social engagement with other people, and often get picked on as kids. And his obsession is with animals. So let's take a listen.
From a scale of 1 to 10, do you think your life would be different without animals?
I think it would be an 8 without animals, because they add so much pleasure to life.
How else do you think your life would be different without them?
I could do without things like cockroaches and snakes.
Well, I'm okay with snakes as long as they're not venomous or like can constrict you or anything.
Yeah, I'm not a big snake person.
But cockroach is just the insect we love to hate.
Yeah, it really is.
Have you ever felt like life is hopeless?
When I was a teenager, I was very depressed. And I think that can be quite common with teenagers who think a lot, you know, and are perceptive.
Am I like that?
You were very much like that.
Do you have any mortal enemies?
I would say my worst enemy is sometimes myself. But I don't think I have any mortal enemies.
Did I turn out to be the son you wanted when I was born? Like, did I meet your expectations?
You've exceeded my expectations, sweetie. Because you know, sure, you have these fantasies of what your child's going to be like, but you have made me grow so much as a parent because you think differently from what they tell you in the parenting books.
Yeah.
I really had to learn to think out of the box with you, and it's made me much more creative as a parent and as a person. You are just so incredibly special to me, and I'm so lucky to have you as my son.
So I have to say, as one who does his share of question asking, I thought those were so brilliant. I mean, have you ever felt like life was hopeless? Do you have any mortal enemies?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Such a great question.
Yeah, he's a great kid.
Peggy Bulger?
Not a kid anymore.
I imagine. Peggy Bulger. So do the questions matter?
Oh, absolutely. And the answers were brilliant, too. Yeah. I mean, it was the interaction there. You could almost, I mean, as I'm listening to that, I can see them and I can see this mother. It's just brilliant. You know, and it makes you tear up.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, I listen to StoryCorps all the time, obviously, but it still moves me. The interaction between that mother and son was just brilliant.
Mm. You know, one of the things that happened coming out of the interview was that Josh got hundreds of letters from public radio listeners. And, you know, he was 12 at the time. He's 16. He actually started college this fall.
Okay.
And I think he was valedictorian of his class.
Wow.
But he received hundreds of letters. And Sarah created a book of letters saying what an amazing kid he is. And she created a book for him of these letters. And whenever he would get picked on at school, he would come home at night and look through those letters with his mom.
I hope he has some pets, too.
Well, you, Peggy, you mentioned this idea of interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the elements that rises to the top when we're talking about Priya Morgenstern, who's talking with her father, Ken. She's with her sister, Bhavani Jaraf. And we should say, David Isay, as we play this piece, he has Alzheimer's. That will become apparent.
He
doesn't have much of a memory. And I guess the question is, in some ways, you know, to me, I wondered, the recollections maybe aren't as important as the interaction itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think this when you hear this is an interview that personifies a lot of what we're trying to accomplish with StoryCorps, and goes back to that definition I talked about stopping to tell someone in your life how much they mean to you. We've launched a bunch of special initiatives over the years, and one of them is an initiative for families who have a loved one with Alzheimer's. And this was one of the early Alzheimer's interviews. And, it's Ken Morgenstern, who passed away a couple years ago, and his two daughters, Priya and Bhavani.
I'm Priya Morgenstern.
Excuse me. Can you raise the volume?
Oh, you want me to speak louder? I can raise my
louder.
Volume.
Yeah.
Okay, let me turn the dial. I'm going to be interviewing my father today, and I'll be interviewing him with my sister, Bhavani. Dad, why don't you say your name and how old you are?
I'm Ken Morgenstern. I think 81.
That's right.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, Dad, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions.
All right.
And you'll answer them the best you can from your memory. So you came out here to New York, and then somehow you met Mom.
I met her in New York?
Yeah, you did.
I don't remember how, when. Mom would remember.
She would have remembered, yeah. Our mom passed away about 4.5 years ago. Do you recall dating her?
Oh, yeah, I remember dating her. She was a sexy gal.
She was. So let's talk about your kids a little bit.
We had 4 kids. Is that the right number?
Yes, it is.
Good. They were great.
Who are they?
You. Who else?
It's Priya, Bhavani.
Priya, Bhavani. And there's a man in there.
David, Dad.
David, oh, yeah.
David's not going to be too happy when he listens to this, Dad.
Who's the best kid?
David.
He was actually the best kid. No, he definitely
was.
And you see us all a lot still, right, Dad?
Dad?
What?
Priya was asking if you still see us a lot.
See you a lot?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Are we in your life?
Sure. What are you talking about?
We're just asking you a question.
Yeah, what's your life like now, Dad?
Oh, it's a wonderful life. I get up in the morning, go to sleep at night, and in between eat three meals. What's wrong with that?
It's a nice thing that it's so easy to make you happy, Dad.
I'm very much like, I think, my father. Mm-hmm. He was an easygoing guy. People used to call him Happy Harry. And I had a lot of its characteristics, I think.
Dad, was there anything that you wished you had gotten in life that you didn't get?
Anything I wish I had gotten in life?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here thinking, I have no regrets on anything. The important thing is I have a family that I love, and they're loving people. That's the biggest thing you can leave as a...
Legacy.
Legacy, yeah.
I want to tell you, Dad, that I've always considered you my guru and teacher.
Well, thank you.
I would say the same. You've been a role model for all of your family. People are constantly saying to us how lucky you are to have all of us. And I turn to them and say, we are because of him. You've created such love around you, and we want to be with you.
Thank you, honey. That's awfully nice to hear.
It's the truth.
We love you, Dad.
Peggy Bulger, how you doing? You okay?
Yeah, I know.
Right?
All of my friends, they call me after they hear StoryCorps on the radio, and they're crying, and they're saying, why do you do that? I have to pull over on the side of the road.
And, you know, I think that, you know, first of all, I love that I think what's one thing that's so special to me about that interview is what happens at the end, and you hear this in a lot of StoryCorps interviews, and it's called, the facilitators call it turning the tables, and that's when the person who is doing the interview tells the person who's being interviewed what they mean to them. You know, most of these interviews, that interview isn't sad, but I think I always hear whether interviews are funny, sad, that it makes people cry, and I think that's because of the authenticity of what happens in the interviews, and that, you know, the interviews we choose and this whole act of kind of generosity of StoryCorps is that you're hearing people who are very familiar, kind of at their best.
Yeah.
And when you hear, you know, lives lived to their best, at their best. And I was thinking about, Doug, about what you were saying about the power of the voice. You understand who Ken Morgenstern was in those 3 minutes,
yeah.
You know. And when you hear, you know, life lived at its best, you're kind of walking on holy ground. It's almost, to me, these are sort of like poems, you know. And I think that's kind of the power of, part of the power of these things.
Yeah, I think it's, Peggy, you're not broken up by the story because it's sad, but it's moving because it's real. I mean, it's completely authentic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that really the power of StoryCorps is that you're really kind of almost eavesdropping on a private conversation. People don't go into the booth thinking, oh, thousands of people are going to hear me. They're going in to have a private conversation and to really find out something about somebody in a more intimate way, and it's just a fluke that maybe a few of them get to be on the radio. And so you are listening at a conversation that's real and meaningful.
You know, I'm thinking is Peggy and I don't, because of the rapid pace of life, don't get a chance to talk very much. She's in Washington, I'm in Brooklyn, but you know, we do surveys of folks when they come out of the StoryCorps booth. And one of the top reasons, it may be the top reason that people say the StoryCorps experience is important to them, is knowing that their story is going to go to the Library of Congress. And I think part of what we're doing in StoryCorps also is saying, we do a lot of outreach with StoryCorps to people who might feel like their stories don't mean anything or aren't worthwhile. I mean, I think a lot of people who are suffering with Alzheimer's feel. Mm-hmm. Have terrible self-esteem problems. And part of what we're doing with this project and with the Library of Congress is saying that not only is your story important, not only is it worthwhile for a family to take, to stop and do this interview, but this is going to go to the Library of Congress. This is part of American history. And, you know, that's something that, that you know, Peggy believes, I believe, you believe, that's part of public broadcasting, that you know, that's part of what America is all about, you know, at its core, that every story matters, that every life matters equally.
And I have to just put in a plug for our archivists who are working on the collection, because there's a database now where it'll be so important for people in the future to be able to plug in keywords and be able to pull up those stories that have to do with whatever the topic or the historical event or whatever in the future. And those kinds of stories aggregated will give us, I think, a real down-to-earth, everyday feel for history that you would not get any other way. Hmm.
Well, if a StoryCorps piece is a poem, our next guest makes a lot of sense. Catherine Coles is with us. She's Utah's poet laureate, an English professor here at the University of Utah. Yesterday, Catherine interviewed her father, Bill Coles, as part of the StoryCorps project, and we've asked her to come in to talk about that experience. And Catherine Coles, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for asking me.
So I'm interested, first of all, when you went in, going into the experience, what did you want? Like, what were your expectations, and what did you want from that experience?
Yeah, it's interesting because I only knew very shortly before we did the interview that we were going to be doing it, and I had a little bit of anxiety about, well, what will I ask? And I'm one of those people who didn't use the question generator in the end at all, because as soon as I really started to think about it, it came very easily. My father, in particular, is from a Swedish family from the upper Midwest. They're very stern and closed-mouthed, and my father is warm and open and generous, but there wasn't storytelling in his family at all. And he came into our family, I think, with that same sort of ethic for himself, that he didn't trouble us with the details of his past and of his youth. And even though our dinner table conversations were very lively, they tended to be engaged with the present or with ideas and not with stories about where he had come from and who he was. And so some of my questions were really just about, well, what do you remember and what was it like? I didn't know his father at all. He died when my father was 16, so I asked a little bit about that. His mother had Alzheimer's by the time I was really old enough to have any memories of her, and so we talked about that. And then also I had some questions about the trajectory of his life that had brought him from where he'd been as a child in a very, very conservative place, a very, very conservative home, and into who he became as an adult. He and my mother were very involved in the 60s in the anti-war movement. Yeah. And so there was a real kind of transformation or turnaround there. And I was curious about that. I wanted to know where that had come from.
What was it like? So how did you had some anxiety, you wondered what was going to happen. How did it go? Was it hard at first, and did you get more comfortable? What was the exchange like? Did it surprise you, the experience at all?
It did a little bit. You know, it's funny because you're addressing this thing that I think must be true for almost everyone, which is the question anxiety, thing. And I had some idea at first that I needed to go in chronological order. But then as we were sitting down, I realized that what I really wanted to do was start with the questions that I wanted to make sure got answered during the interview. Yeah. And so I actually ended up starting in the middle of the questions about his past with his father. And then I moved forward to the Vietnam War years, and then backward in time to what he remembered about being a child, where he was. And in a lot of ways, I think that was more natural and more like a poem, which is not rigorous about how it deals with narrative trajectory or time. And I think that made it feel comfortable that we were both able to let go of our anxieties about what was going to happen, or any kind of expectations that this needed to be anything other than a conversation between us, for us, and then I think for my family. And it's great that it's going to be in the Library of Congress. I have thought a lot about this question of history and the details of the ordinary lives that really make up the fabric of history. And obviously that's one of the things that you bring to the table, but it was really just for us.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like, I mean, it was a 40-minute conversation, but did you feel like you learned something about your father that you hadn't really expected?
I definitely learned some things about him. I mean, some of them are just, some of the things are just biographical details, but also the way in which he constructs his own ideas about the past and his own sense of self out of the details of the past. And because we didn't really, his kids have access to those details very much previously, he emerges in a way as a different kind of person. And I think that the possibility for conversations like this to continue in the family now exists. We both remembered at the end that in my first book, I actually have a poem called Not a Storytelling Family. That is, in a way, about how the fact that he didn't tell stories allowed me to invent him as a writer. And that might be one of the reasons that I am a writer, whereas other people become writers because they have this wealth of stories from the past. But he was the one who brought up that poem, and I wasn't sure if he would even remember it.
Wow. Let me, David, I say we're running out of time, and here's a question I've been dying to ask you. What are the lessons that you think you've learned listening to story after story after story? Not the basics of storytelling, not the process of how you do it, but I wonder, do you feel like in some way this has made you, you know, a better man, a better person?
That's a great question. I don't listen. The people who listen to the story after story after story, sometimes thousands of stories, are the facilitators who are in the booth or now, as with Catherine in the room, because we do some of these interviews in quiet rooms. One of my great pleasures is talking to facilitators after they are done with their tour of duty for StoryCorps to see what they've learned.
Yeah.
So my lessons and knowledge is at a remove, but reinforced by the fact that everybody tells me the same thing, and those lessons are that that people are basically good, that you can't judge people by what they look like. You have no idea what their internal life is. I think one thing that all the facilitators learn, and we talked about this earlier, is the fragility of life and the importance of, as I said earlier, I mean, all the facilitators tell me that one of the things that they do after having served a tour of duty with StoryCorps is that they will call their parents or other loved ones regularly and tell them that they love them. It's a little hackneyed, but there are these big life truths that come through StoryCorps the necessity of living every day at the present, the necessity of trying to, you know, drill down to what's really important and who's really important to you, and kind of clearing out some of the white noise and saying the things to the people in your life that you want to say to them so that you can live a life without regrets. Yeah, it's definitely made me a better person. And I think StoryCorps is a very hopeful project. Everything that comes out of StoryCorps to me is hopeful. Hopeful about humanity, hopeful about who people are and what people can be when they live life to its fullest.
Peggy Bulger, do you mind answering that question? What you think you've learned over time by listening to stories?
Oh, gosh. I guess the reason why I became a folklorist in the first place is that, and those of us, you as a radio producer and Dave as a radio person, as a journalist, is that you love people and you love to talk to people and love to listen to their lives. I guess, though, with the StoryCorps project, what I've learned is that you don't need to have a degree in order to interview someone and learn something profound. In fact, that might be an impediment, that really it is the people in your life that are the most important to interview, and that if most of us who are folklorists, we go out and we interview people who are not in our family, in our lives, and in fact, StoryCorps has taught me to go back and interview my children, my grandmother, and really ask those questions in my own life.
That's Peggy Bulger. She's director of the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. Joined us today from NPR in Washington. Peggy, thank you very much for your time. Grateful.
Thank you.
David Isay, founder, of course, of StoryCorps, author of the book Listening as an Act of Love and Mom, a Celebration of Mothers from StoryCorps. He joined us from Brooklyn. David, it's always good to hear from you. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Doug.
And Catherine Coles, Utah's poet laureate, interviewed a Father Bill yesterday as part of the StoryCorps visit to Utah. Kate, thanks very much.
Thanks.
A group of trained StoryCorps facilitators are in Utah conducting interviews at the 12th Annual Utah Senior Expo. The expo runs today from 8 until 7, tomorrow from 8 until 3. There's a link to it on our website, as well as a link to the StoryCorps project, and you can get all the details about that. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.